honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 99-year-old Ralph Graham. He was the guest of honor this year at the annual golf tournament supporting Castle Air Museum in Central California. And more than 76 years ago now, he was on the same bombing mission that would prove to be the final mission for that museum's heroic namesake, General Frederick Castle. If you ever have the chance to visit the Air Force Memorial in our nation's capital, you will find Castle's name inscribed on a black granite wall there with other Air Force recipients of the Medal of Honor. Ralph Graham is one of the only remaining veterans who was in the air as part of Castle's final mission on December 24th, 1944.
So, you've had a lot of time to think about this.
Absolutely.
I imagine you may have some different emotions for different aspects of it. What are some of the things you think about when you consider that twist of fate or the uniqueness of the difference that 12 minutes made in your life and others?
I wrote it down. It's in there. And I said this, the Germans had 8 days that they didn't fly. We had 8 days we didn't fly. You had any time to make proposals on what to do. The Germans prepared too, but when it came to be, the Germans was prepared. We wasn't, because who's going to send out the whole 8th Air Force being led by a squadron that didn't have one escort plane? Mm-hmm. But yet there was thousands of them in the area. But we didn't have one. Now, the tale was that they were supposed to join us at a certain point, but the fog had not lifted in that particular area, and they couldn't get off the ground. We should have had escort from time to wheels up on takeoff, because we were leading the whole 8th Air Force in. Castle was.
How much did you know about him at the time?
I didn't even know him. See, he came down from Wing headquarters to fly that one mission. We didn't know who was Wing, that, you know how many planes that is, or how many, that's three groups.
Right.
And three groups, you're talking about, we had 39 planes. Multiply that from three, that's over 100. And he was in charge of that. But he came down to fly that one mission, leading everybody in.
And he didn't have to.
No. He was a brigadier general.
Right.
He just made general.
What does that say about him, that he wanted to be there leading that mission, even though he'd already flown all those missions and accomplished so much and didn't need to be out there doing what he did?
Well, they said that he had flown more bad missions than anybody. I said, well, you know, time will get you. But when he went down, he was very calm about what was happening. And then, of course, next thing we knew, they were bailing out.
And you were hearing this on the radio?
No, that's what people told us, you know, that was in the mission. In fact, one of them I met later on at San Antonio when we had a reunion was a waste gunner, I think, and he said he was one of the that bailed out. But they said he couldn't have never got out because both feet was on fire.
Mm.
But even with that, he got it. He wanted to guide that plane away from anything on the ground because we was over friendly territory, you know. He wanted to guide it into an open field. That's what he had told the co-pilot. He says, y'all go, I can't get out. He says, I'll take it in. That's what makes you want to keep this thing going.
That's why you're here.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason why we're here today.
So what do you think about when you see his name out there?
Well, that's where heroes were born. I mean, you think about it, the first thing you think about then is, I don't know how many we got, but there's a man that knew he was going to die. And he did what he did for a purpose. He knew he couldn't make it because he couldn't even walk to the bailout. So it makes you wonder. Even though I didn't know him, I had never known him and didn't know who that Castle was. Well, I learned to respect him, being a part of our efforts.
Well, and for you. Okay, so General Castle was a hero. He knew that he was giving his life for our country.
And I knew that. Mm-hmm.
What would have happened to you if that first plane you guys tried to take off in would have been okay, and you would have been in the formation? What do you really think?
I suppose that I would be like all the rest, that you would do the best thing that you could do. Now, we did have one. I'll tell you about this.
All right.
And we don't know who he, what he, what position he was, but he had a breakdown. They couldn't treat him over there. They needed to send him home. Well, they found out that they had a plane leaving in North in the RCAF, the Royal Canadian Air Force, and they had a plane leaving the next day. So we made it back, and they picked Crockett to fly him up there. Well, it takes crew, skeleton crew, to carry one of the things up. So it took a navigator, me, engineer, and the pilot. There's four of them. And we carried him up. And I remember stepping back in the waist to speak to him. But he was so heavily sedated that you couldn't talk. And he had civilian clothes on, so we don't know what he was. But we kind of figured that it could have been a co-pilot because he's the only crew member that had nothing to do under attack. Pilot had to fly. All the other positions had a gun. So it made it sensible to think that it might have been. And we don't know for sure, never did, but we think it might have been a co-pilot.
What was the hardest thing for you to deal with?
Oh, I tell you what, we had such a great crew. We thought of a mission as a crew, you know, as a crew. But there were times when you could see things were happening to your crew, you know, they were what they call flat happy. That's when the guy starts laughing at things that's not funny.
Mm.
And you kind of try to figure out what can I say to him, you know, what can I do for him. And the best thing to do is just try to get back on something funny and forget about it. You know, we don't have to fly no more for a while. Let's do something.
What do you think enabled you to keep your wits about you?
Well, like I say, I had about 2 years more than the rest of the crew had. And I've been beat up a little bit, you know. That doesn't mean that you're eliminated from all of that, but it did help, and I had a lot of faith in the pilot. Boy, he was a dandy.
Crockett.
Mm-hmm. He knew, like when we was coming over, when he got word, it was word because of the crew, you know, the responsibility that he bore. It was sort of stay with the crew attitude, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're committed. But I spoke a little bit about that at the end of the book when we finished. Oh, I think that's the reason why. You don't know how many people have called me. One guy sent me $100. Other people sending stuff in to me and stacked that high.
Because they read the book and
because
it touched
them? Read the book.
Why did you want to write the book?
Well, everybody on that crew wanted what had happened corrected, you know.
That you guys weren't shot down, you really made it back?
Every one of us. We didn't get a scratch.
So you wanted to set that record straight?
Absolutely. I wanted the record straight. And they did, too. Because they was saying we got knocked down and that's not right. And they just wanted the record straight. Every time we'd have a reunion, somebody would say, well, who's going to talk about it? And finally, when they were all gone, the last crew member died in 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, I got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write it. And I did. I wrote it. And then I'd write it over. My buddies would help me. And mm-hmm. I'd do the typing, and I didn't even type. I just writing out in pencil, you know.
Mm.
And it took about a year finally to get it to where I sent it in and asked them if they wanted to print it, and they called me back about 3 days later and said, yeah, absolutely.
What do you hope people get out of the book?
What those people have seen about how everything went, how we all reacted. It analyzes a mission, really, and how what can happen in case something happened to us like it does.
What was that Christmas like, the day after that mission?
Well, that's in the book, too. We knew we went in. The crew had just came in. They was in the same Quonset hut with us. In fact, the night before, we played pinochle and became acquainted with them pretty good. Well, we come in that night. Of course, they wasn't there. And it's our job to pick everything up that's their personal stuff and mail it home. But it was so quick, we didn't know whether they might have bailed out. We didn't want to start doing anything until we found out what happened to them. But it was a pretty dark day. We was going to have a Christmas party. And, of course, we had all the stuff laying on the cot. And instead of having a party, we just took all that stuff that a kid would like and carried it down to the orphan's home and gave it to them and come back and got ready for another mission the next morning because we had to keep doing something. You know, you can't sit there and fret, you know. As bad as it was, you still got to look ahead. After all this stuff that I wrote, it didn't get to it, but when them people saw that there was 9 planes that shot down out of a squadron, the head people up there losses. I mean, there was some necks took place, head, neck, and the bottom. There was a different command on every part of that thing.
Because that wasn't supposed to happen anymore. That happened a lot earlier in the war, but that wasn't supposed to happen anymore at this point.
That's right.
So because you're...
Well, the mistake, you know, was made on account of that fog.
The escort's not
but
been able to fly.
They should have prepared for it. I mean, you know, you went into the unknown when you started up again.
Mm-hmm.
And they should have been prepared. Nothing else. Just had escort bars from takeoff, really.
Right.
Because it's going into dark. I mean, as far as what's going to happen is concerned.
Yeah.
And we were, it was such a mess that these people on the ground were just absolutely torn all to pieces. And they seen that daylight come, and we started over. It really made you feel like, well, we were doing something. But even though they knocked down the 8 planes, we got 13 of theirs and 2 damaged and another probable. And I put all that in the book, too. If we'd had an escort, we wouldn't have lost the plane, I'll tell you right through. Because we'd been sitting there at 14,000 feet waiting to come up. We wouldn't never let them. They'd been underneath the bottom. They would never got up.
Have you had the occasion over the years to meet some of those guys who survived on the ground? Have you ever talked to them to find out how much they appreciated what you did?
The very first people, the people that I served with when I first went in, the engineers, I met some of them when I was discharged. And there's one that's telling me about the people that got run over by the tanks.
Right.
That's how come me to know it.
Mm-hmm.
They told us what was happening.
I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you. I am curious, when you came home from the war, what was different about you compared to the guy who went overseas?
That's in the book, too. I said, you know, I spent from childhood, and 18-year-old, until I was 23. So I didn't know anything about a job or how to get one, and I lost the first 3 rungs on the ladder that we're supposed to climb to reach the greats of American, you know. But I wanted people just to understand that, to kind of help me get going, my feet on the ground again, and they, of course, they did as best they could. But everything worked out fine. They really did. I had a great family.
Yeah, how many kids and grandkids and great-grandkids do you have?
Oh, my gosh. They're in the book.
You can read the whole list, huh?
There's a picture in the book of of all my relatives. 60 or 70. I couldn't tell you the number.
Well, I ask because it's a lot of people who might not be here if you hadn't taken off 12 minutes late.
That's exactly right. And I told them that I'd been to a reunion, and I seen kids playing. I seen some fishing, some playing baseball, and I don't know how many, but I wondered what it would have looked like if it hadn't been for that 12 minutes. If it hadn't been for that, I might not have, that might have been blank, you know.
Well, if there's anything else you want to include, feel free. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us this story.
I hope that you edit out maybe a little of this stuff.
Don't worry about that. I do have a couple more questions. One, at 99 years old, what would you say you're most thankful for?
Well, it really started way back 55 years ago. When I came out of the Army, like I say, I was lost. And like everybody else, I went with the gang. And I got on alcohol. And it got so bad that I had to do something. So one day I was thinking, I'm not going to make it without help. But I got 4 kids, and I want to see that they get grown and married. And I just asked God to give me 20 years to do that in. Well, he's given me 60. So, you know, if you look at it in a broader picture than that, I don't have to say a thing. That was it.
And it doesn't sound like he's done with you yet.
I don't think he is. To live that long, I don't even have a doctor.
Is there anything that you haven't done in your 99 years that you're still looking forward to?
Just keep on keeping on. That's all. I've tried to help people if I can. That's what I want to do, help as many people as I can. And let them see what can happen when you got faith. And you try to live it. You know, if you just ask for strength to do it, you can do it.
Last thing, this Castle Air Museum, what does it mean to you, and why do you think it matters?
Oh, man, I owed something to him. Everybody does. It was on that flight that lived.
And Ralph Graham is one of the last ones left to tell that story, a story captured in his book, 12 Minutes, The Untold Story of the Ghost Plane at the Battle of the Bulge. You heard a lot of that story today, but there's even more in the book. I have the link online for you at hometownheroesradio.com, and you heard Joe Pruzzo say they're hoping to keep it in stock at the gift shop at Castle Air Museum in Atwater, California, still bearing the name of a hero who was awarded the Medal of Honor for his supreme sacrifice on Christmas Eve, 1944. That's all the time we have on Hometown Heroes today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.